Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, welcome back. We're back here with Kieran Flanagan, VP of Growth at HubSpot. Now, this is part two of two. If you haven't heard the first part, go listen to episode 21 of Growth Marketing Today. And in this episode, Kieran shares more stuff about HubSpot. Actually, he's really going to get into depth how the growth team at HubSpot is structured. And hint, it's not by product. It's actually by something else. You also learn about Kieran, what he looks at for at people when hiring for his growth team at HubSpot, his biggest lesson as a leader of a global growth team, and where he sees marketing going in 5 to 10 years. Now, if you want tweetable quotes from this episode and a high-level outline, feel free to go to growthmarketing.today/022. That's 22. growthmarketing.today/022. Now, let's get going. Let's hear my chat with Kieran.
We have horizons. So we have three horizons. So horizon one is basically the things that are going to make you successful this year, right? So the things that you know will, it's 12-month view of your business, and it's the things that fall into the bucket that will make that 12-month successful. And depending upon where we are, we're like, as a company, maybe 85% there. Then you have horizon two. And then horizon two are plays that you think will work, but they haven't been proven. You have some data to show that they are directionally correct, but they are still unproven and they're not part of horizon one, which means they are not part of how we will be successful in the next 12 months. Mm. And then horizon three are like speculative bets on the future. Right, things that we think are the right things to do today to be as successful as a company tomorrow. Now, those horizons differentiate the teams. For the marketing, your marketing team would probably be more in horizon two and three because the marketing team should be at the cutting edge of where you think the market is actually going to go. So if you think about growth teams, they're going to be successful. Most of the things they're going to do are incremental because it's in the horizon one, right? They know that there are things that will actually help them hit that 12-month plan. And some of the disruptive bets are probably either in horizon two or horizon three, depending upon how much time you spend on them.
Wow. It's a very thorough response to that, man. Thanks.
Yeah, it's because this has been my world for the last month of planning out the different horizons. So it's a very timely question that is kind of cemented in my brain.
Nice. In terms of the structure of your team, I know there's been discussions around like how growth teams should be structured, whether it's by funnel or by product. How have you like looked into structuring your growth and marketing team at HubSpot? And I know it's global, yeah. So this is like adds an extra layer of complexity. Yeah.
So I actually wrote a post like just about this last month about how to structure a growth team because it's been my biggest pain point over the last 2 years. Okay, so let me try to give you things that are useful. It's definitely hard. And that like when I talk to people who are telling me, hey, I cannot get this growth thing figured out and it's constantly a battle. It's a battle for everyone. Like maybe Facebook, it's not. But I talk to a bunch of companies and a lot of people do struggle with the correct model and the correct, like who these people report into. I'll go through some things. The first thing I pointed out when I wrote about this is like, one of my theories is that the people matter more than the structure and that the people who work within growth are going to work cross teams, right? So you take my example, I had a growth marketing team who work with product and product are part of a different org, right? The growth marketing team who are like a COO type team, right? They run experiments, they try to increase metrics, are in a different team than the product team who are trying to think about how to make our products, great products for our customers, have improved NPS. And they have to work together to do these growth experiments. And if goals are misaligned, the thing breaks down. Mm. So we had points in time where our goals are misaligned and things did not work well. I think we've done a better job now of aligning goals. But the people matter a lot because the people need to be able to work as a team with people who are not actually within their team. Mm. So like, think about the product team, the engineering team, and themselves like being part of the same mission and that they have their shared goals. And it can be small things such as when they have an experiment that wins, like the engineer is not just the person that implemented it, they're the person that actually had input and part of that win. And it's not all just the growth marketer standing up and saying, ah, this is my thing. I won. Like, you win as a team, you lose as a team. And to make everyone feel good about the impact that they're having. In terms of structure, there's a lot of different structures. Brian Balfour at Reforge has a couple of, he may have a post about it with actually diagrams of structures, but it's so unique to the company you're in. If you are a startup starting today on growth, you can probably org it in a better way than a lot of companies who are like us, who came into freemium as a fully formed business and had to try to reorganize things to make growth work. I can give you the way we are set up in 218, which I think is the right way.
Yeah.
Which is by funnel layer. So okay. Like pods at funnel layer. So like an acquisition pod that are accountable for acquiring people through the product. So not like their core thing is how does the platform itself acquire users, right? That's through virality, ecosystems, marketplaces, like those different plays. Then activation, where you would have growth marketers and product people with the exact same mission. And that's the core thing here is like those people have one metric, which is team activation. Mm. And they are all fail or win on that together. And then similar to monetization, we have a similar pod there. And their mission is the same. Their metric is the same. It's revenue, percentage of revenue that comes in through the freemium business for our sales org. And that's the way we set it up. I think it's a good way to set it up, right? If you have these pods. Yeah, I think there's lots of different models, but there's lots of different models. Like you probably, talk to a bunch of people. Yeah, you probably get
ask you something pods. About that. So that's one of the things I've been thinking about too, would be it makes sense to set it up by funnel. And you're right. You have the acquisition pod. I like that term pod. It's like like a Ninja Turtle star. I don't know.
Yeah.
You got your activation pod. Then you got your monetization pod. One of the things that I was thinking about would be, in my mind, would be maybe some kind of misalignment where maybe the acquisition team is getting a lot of people, but they're not good people to activate. And then you activate people who are not great at, that won't end up monetizing.
Yeah.
Do you have like some kind of like central metric? Like, you know, we're separated by funnel, but we're all going to be tied by, you know, active users or percentage of.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. So we have three, what we call muscle groups, which is the freemium, which is the acquisition, activation, and monetization. And those teams all attend each other's muscle groups. So like people who are in the activation and monetization are go and attend what the acquisition team are doing and vice versa. So it's pretty clear when the acquisition team have spiked acquisition, they give information of why that's for. And then we've had times where you could see someone who works in activation would say, oh, right, because we have just like seen this huge drop in user activation. They're like, oh, right, this is not a good source of users. So there's a loop of like knowing what other teams are working on to see how they affect your side of the funnel. I think what you'll find is like most people are trying to acquire, like it breaks down mostly at acquisition, and where it breaks down is usually paid, because paid is somewhere where you can like acquire low quality users and mass very quickly. If you're doing things like organic and these other things, you're generally not going to be acquiring a lot of like Buffett users, because like, you're not going to start to like acquire organic traffic on content that's just totally different from what your product is. But I think that like that tight alignment comes from, I think those clear, if you were going to go for one metric, it's like it's revenue, right? It's LTV, that they could all look to see if that is going up or down over time. But the teams themselves are pretty knowledgeable in terms of knowing how each other could affect their side of the metrics.
I like how you called it muscle group. That's cool. You guys have awesome names.
Yeah. We were good at branding, internal branding of our, we have lots of different internal brands, and we have our pods and our muscle groups.
What is so muscle groups is when activation team and acquisition team meets together. Is that what that is?
It's basically like a bi-weekly run through of each of those teams last 2 weeks. Hey, what are the things that you've worked on? What are your results to date? What are the things you're working on? And the acquisition team will run through what they're working on, and the other teams can come in and learn. Not that they're not talking to each other, like they all know each other, they're talking to each other. Yeah. But it's just a time to come into a room and each team to describe what they're actually working on in detail. So everyone is always within, everyone understands like what people are actually doing. You have to keep in mind HubSpot is a company now of over 2,000 people.
Yeah.
So these things may not, like in smaller companies, it's probably, that team is probably one team, right? It's probably just like a growth team that owns all for metrics, but in our way, we've just kind of split it out. So we have like complete focus on each step of that funnel.
That makes sense. In terms of what a pod looks like who's in the pod? Do you have a designer? You have a growth marketer? You have a developer design? What does a pod made up of?
Yeah. So we have growth marketers. We have UX, design, PM, and then engineers, tech lead and engineers. And then we have across those three funnels, product insights, like people who gather. So for example, we ran a lot of regression analysis to figure out the most high value events a user would do prior to signing up that correlated to retention or that user upgrade and then retain it. And that's done by the product insights team who kind of give that information. They're kind of a asset for those different pods to acquire information from.
Did you figure out what that was? I'm kind of curious. I'm like, what is the event?
The CRM is basically importing your contacts, but that brings in a whole other world of conversation that we've had is like, hey, if you've imported your contacts, you've probably only got one step in the door, right? You've made the commitment to import data into a system. So then it's like, okay, well, what is the reasons that people would not import data? Is it a motivational problem? Is it the fact that import data is too difficult to do? Is it like, this freaks me out, I don't want to do this, because I'm like, what you find is when people are looking at software, they could be on their personal account. They don't want to like import data into their personal accounts. So can you make it easier for them to do that? I think that's one of a couple of things that we know if we could increase that by 2-3%, then our actual retention looks better. Our revenue looks better.
Nice. I want to take a step back. You were talking about how your number one thing for structure is people. What kind of things do you look for in people, particularly like joining a team?
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's a good question. So generally I've hired, I think, people who are deeply passionate about marketing, right? So there are people who over time will appear on great podcasts like this, other podcasts, and talk about marketing. Like it's not a 9-to-5 for them. Like some of the people that I have on my team have take me through all of the courses they're doing on a given order. And actually part of my job is to make them stop doing so many courses because they just have like too much on, but they're so passionate about learning. And like, you'll find that many of them will have like, they're doing side hustles where they may have a blog, they may be doing their own podcast, they may be doing their own like guest blogging, who knows what they're doing, but they're just like in the space. That they work really well with others. Like the people on my team are just so easy to work with. I think some of them have been through many iterations as we've tried to like figure out the growth structure. And each iteration, their primary goal was how to get something in place that worked best for HubSpot, right? They wanted to hit the HubSpot goals. They're not thinking, well, I want this iteration because I get to own this, or that iteration because I want to own that. Like they really care about the mission. They care about being successful as a team. Like they stand up and they go, hey, we've done this awesome thing. They don't care so much about the credit. They care about their portfolio of work, which they can go into any person and talk about growth and show a portfolio of work. And they care most about being able to get their work, being able to get work done and being able to get a high quantity of things done. Yeah. And then, you know, the age old data focus, right? Like they're very interested in data, very good at data, sometimes have to be pulled back on how much data they can actually get for individual things because they're so good at it. But you can honestly go too deep in data, I think, at times.
Yeah, I know. Interesting. What do you mean by that? Too deep into data? You mentioned it. This whole trend, like everybody's talking about being data driven, and it's become such like a, I don't want to say buzzword, but it's like, yeah, I'm data driven. And then like, are you taking data?
Let's go examples. Like you could spend, I'll give you like extreme examples that are just exaggerations of things, but let's say we spent like 3 months building this demand model. Well, if we get this number of users this month, and you just go, well, if we just got a shit ton of users, we're going to probably be fine, right? So let's just get a shit ton of users. Like whatever the model is going to tell me, it's going to tell me I need to like get a shit ton of users. So I'm just going to go and try and do that. And on the growth side of things, like if you're spending all of your time trying to get the data to prove that you're going to be right, then you're kind of missing the point, right? If you know you're going to be right, why run experiments? Why do things? Like you're doing that to retrieve information. And I think it's a trade-off, right? How long does it take you to acquire this amount of data versus how long does it take you just to done the thing? And it's what the trade-off is. And if the trade-off is, well, it would have took me so much longer to do the thing and get the data, and the data could at least tell me if I'm directing it correct, yes. If the trade-off is, well, I would do this thing and that would be the third thing that I've got wrong and my product team will kill me and they don't want to work with me anymore, then yeah, I get it. So it's like, what are the trade-offs? but you need to do work. Time spent gathering data is important, but you're not doing the work, right? You're not doing, we're talking about like a game of winning and loser.
You're right.
Winning and losing. Like, data is helping me, like, it gives me a little bit of like an edge to go towards win, but it doesn't help me win or lose. Like, that's not gonna,
interesting,
that's not gonna be the work. So you have to get that balance right of like, just do the work. Like, if you get me a ton of users, it's going to be better than you telling me a month later that I've built out this complicated demand model and the model is telling me I need to get more users. Yeah, I know.
I love it. Just do work. You know, the data helps you do work, but if it's not, it's going to trade off with not doing work, then that's not going to help out.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your lessons growing a global growth team at HubSpot. Like, what's been your biggest lesson in this past few years? Just like this massive, you said 2,000 people organization leading growth and marketing.
Yeah. Let's see if I can give you a couple. I haven't thought about this actually, but it's a good time to think about it. Personal lessons. Sorry, like give you like completely transparent personal lesson is that I've learned how black and white I am. And I think that's a good thing at times, but something I need to get better at is like, this team are doing great work. And this team are doing not great work and they won't do the things I want them to do. And that's the way, like, I'm like, why won't they do the things they want to do? And I'm like harassing them to do my things. And what I've learned is like, there's gray and like that team could have multiple reasons for not being able to achieve the things I want them to achieve. And that's really important when you're working with great product teams and great engineering teams and you're unaware of how those organizations truly work, right? And how those people truly work. And how they're cool and how they're motivated and what are the real blockers for that team to not be able to do the things you want you to do. And that comes from just being on the pressure to hit targets and seeing blockers. And then like, this is a blocker. I don't understand it. So I think that was a pretty good learning for me is to dig deeper into the reasons behind why different teams work the way they do. From growing the growth team, I think the structure is hard if you do not have it very clear on who owns what.
Mm.
And what is their mission, right? So like, here is the person that is the person that will be able to tell me if I am winning and losing on this metric. And they have a team that are incentivized in the same way, regardless of what functional teams these people are actually on. And when you do not have that, when you have gray around who really owns this metric, and when you have gray around, well, we have these priorities, but we have these other priorities that we think are just equally important, it becomes a shit show. So you have to get very good at having the clarity on who are the people that you can, you know, go to and say, like, why is this thing not where it should be?
Mm.
And that you have to have a team with that person to make them successful that are all incentivized and motivated in the same way towards the same goal.
Nice. Well, that's great to hear. I know I was talking about team a lot. How about for marketing? Where do you see marketing going in growth and marketing or any, or where do you see going in the next like year or two, or even long-term, like 5 to 10 years, just companies in general, not necessarily HubSpot, like where's marketing going? Like in your, you know, being in this massive marketing focused company, you must have some insight into or ideas.
We are all getting replaced by AI bots and they will do our jobs and then we can retire and do other stuff randomly. That is what I am working towards. I don't know. I think it's interesting, right? I find it like you catch a couple of trends. Like we were early on bots, right? So we caught that trend pretty well. And then we bought Motion Did AI primarily because like that's a great company. And we believe in that as something that's going to be disruptive for communication. And that our marketing team were actually using that prior to us acquiring the platform. So I think we caught that pretty well. And we've seen pretty good engagement rates through the messenger bots that we have. I think that the thing you can assume will happen is that a lot of your data analysis and things like that, you can do that quicker and more effectively through machine learning. So more of the decisions you make should actually be based upon data that a system is telling you is like correct, right? But I find it hard to, you know, it comes back to the horizons, right? If you focus too much on these speculative things, you can like tear yourself away from the things that actually work. And when you think about it, like as much as marketing has changed a lot, we are still a company that acquire a ton of demand from Google and a ton of demand from the content we produce. And in some areas it can change rapidly, but in other areas, like if you do the things that, you know, have worked for a long time, you can still be quite successful. Awesome. I don't think I have a great answer for it. I haven't really thought beyond how you'd be successful next year.
No, that's good. These are a great response in terms of AI and AI taking over our jobs at some point.
Yeah, that's my main thing is I assume that will happen at some point.
Hey, I'd like to wrap this up very soon. What kind of advice would you have for people who are trying to get into growth or marketing nowadays? Maybe they're studying in university right now or college, or they're doing something else like sales. What would you tell them to be doing right now to get a good job?
So, yeah, I can give you an example about this and if you won't mind giving this example. So,
perfect.
The reason I love this industry and the reason I was changed from developer to working in marketing, I work every hour nonstop, is because it gives people who are just entrepreneurial and maybe they don't have MBAs or they didn't go to the best colleges, it gives them a level playing field based upon how hard they're willing to hustle. And what I mean by that is overly love that word and hustle, and it was overused, like Gary's out there, he's doing his brand, but what I mean by that is you could be a person who has no qualifications in marketing, have the most successful Instagram page. You could have one of the most successful SlideShares. You could have a successful blog. You can start to build a portfolio of work in this industry without having to go through, lots of expensive courses and all of those things. And I'll give you a good example. So when I changed from development to marketing, my younger brother, who I'm very close with, he decided to do computer science in university and do the same path as me to be a developer because we don't have great career guidance in Ireland, so he just copied me. And if I could have told him, if I knew he was doing that, he did it without telling me, I would tell him not to have done it because I'm like, actually, I hate what I'm doing. He didn't know I hated what I was doing.
Oh my goodness.
So he dropped out of university and he was in a place where he was what do I do now? When you were told you should go to school, you should go to university, you should qualify something and you should spend all of your years doing that thing from 9 to 5 for the rest of your life. That's basically what we were told to do. And what I did was I moved him down to my house. He lived with me for 2 years. And within that time, we started working on affiliate sites every night from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. And then after that, we would watch battle rapping. And we did that for 6 months to 8 months. Then he got a job as an intern for free. He interned for free for 3 months, got no money. I put him up in my house. Then he got a role and then he got another role. And now he's doing he's running his own little barber shop, hairdresser empire, and also working in a role where he's on a great growth team and doing great, right? And I think that's why I love this industry, because what he did was just work hard and find something that he was passionate about. And he put a lot of hours in and then just made it happen. And then when he went for a job, he had a portfolio of work. We had sold some sites. We had a YouTube channel that had a couple of million views. And he can go, why do you need qualifications when you can see what I've done from scratch?
So true. Just get shit done, right?
Just build something. Just do work. There's just no excuse that when you come and you say you've got a marketing qualification, yeah, but do you have a blog? Have you wrote a post? Have you tweeted? There's no barriers to entry, which is why this is a great industry for people who want to work hard and have a different type of life.
Interesting. That's great to hear. Hey, before I wrap up, is there any shout out you want to do, any promotions? Maybe you want to send people to your blog, your LinkedIn, you want to send people to a HubSpot landing page. Any promotion you have right now is yours.
Yeah, I would ask people who are interested in this, just connect me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is one of my go-to places. I love connecting with people in there. You can find me on kieranflanagan.io. I have a newsletter that I send out, a monthly email around just growth information, articles that I have come across from my network and I want to share with people and what they've learned about trying to implement this tactic. So connect me on LinkedIn. You can go to kieranflanagan.io, sign up for the newsletter. Any of those things would be cool.
Awesome, man. And I'm one of your subscribers. I've been getting your newsletter.
Awesome. It's great. I hope it's helpful. So
any listeners who should sign up, it's been one of my go-to resources.
Appreciate that, Ronnie.
Hey, Kieran, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Hey, thanks for listening on this episode. Man, I'm just so blown away by what Kieran said. And he's definitely a thought leader in this space. Feel free to follow him. Go check him out. He's at Twitter at SearchBrath. One of the quotes that he said in this episode is he shared with us how he structured the growth team at HubSpot
is by funnel layer teams or pods. They have an acquisition, activation, and monetization growth teams at HubSpot. They also have something they call muscle groups. Wow, man, they have such a great brand names, even for the teams. Now, if you want a high-level outline and quotes from this episode, again, go to growthmarketing.today/022. If you have any feedback or questions, come on, just send me an email at ramley@growthmarketingtoday, or you can just tweet at me at growthtoday. I just want to wrap this up. This is Ramley from Grow Marketing Today, and keep on growing. Passion, 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 passion.